This is MSO NewsSports.com. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined by the chief of police in the city of Lynn, Kevin Coppinger, who's also a candidate for Essex County Sheriff. And Kevin, welcome. Great to be talking with you.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, Kevin, I want to talk about some of the latest news from the city of Lynn and Lynn Police and police implications, I think, for Lynn and nationally, and would love to get your perspective on a few of these issues. First, this week in the Daily Item, there was a story about some budget cuts in Lynn and in particular to the police department. Explain those and what do they mean for policing in Lynn?
Well, right now we're in a little bit of a quandary as far as staffing levels. The Lynn Police Department averages about 193 police officers when we're at full strength, with 13 officers shy right now. On top of that, the recent contract was settled between the Lynn Police Association and the City of Lynn, which is a four-year contract that averages out about 9% over the 4 years. The money to fund that contract, some of it is going to be provided through the reserve account through transfers through the Lynn City Council and Mayor Judy Kennedy, and the other, about $1 million, is going to be taken out of my fiscal year 17 budget, which runs from July 1st of 16 through June 30th of next year. So it's the $1 million that I have to deal with. I don't have $1 million in my budget that's just sitting there that hasn't been identified to be used for appropriate purposes. So in order to absorb that cut, I had to make some substantial reductions in staffing levels. I'm not talking about layoffs. I'm talking about transferring officers from special units back to the uniform patrol in the what we call the route cars, the officers that patrol the neighborhoods. The patrol is obviously the backbone of police agencies, no matter where you are. They're the individuals that respond to 911 calls. So in brief, I transferred a total of 12 officers back from some of these special units. Some of them were our warrant squad. Some were from our community liaison team. One was a traffic investigator. One was one of our detectives from our special investigations unit. They go back to division this coming Sunday. And the goal here is to reduce overtime. And that's how I'm going to at least chip into that $1 million deficit.
Right. The some of the issues here, Kevin, about national policing issues, that it's in the news and we're all familiar with it, whether it be the recent situations out in Milwaukee involving police, Dallas cops being shot and killed, and that's happening around the country as well. What's your take on it? You're right in it, so to speak, and your officers, your members of the police department, what are they thinking at this point?
I got to tell you, I've been a police officer for 33 years. This is probably the most trying time to be a police officer nationwide. I went through the Rodney King era way back when, the incident that occurred out in Los Angeles when Mr. King was beaten by police officers and it turned into criminal charges against the officers. I call today's policing the post-Ferguson era of policing. Everybody knows what happened in Ferguson, Missouri a couple of years ago. Law enforcement is on the forefront of everybody's minds. There's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. I look at it this way. There's about 850,000 police officers nationwide. I'm going to freely admit we've had a few of those police officers that have made bad mistakes, serious mistakes. People have lost their lives with some of these mistakes. Not everything you see in the media, not everything you see on social media is true, but let's be honest, let's face facts. We have some officers who have done some wrong and need to pay the price. The problem here is it's fested, fested into a bigger problem because of perception. Folks, I know particularly with the black community, those young black males, they're afraid to be pulled over by police officers, particularly white police officers, because they don't know what's going to happen. And frankly, I understand that, and I'll get to it in a second, why I understand that. And police officers, on the other hand, are hesitant to pull people of color over because they're going to be branded a racist. And it's doing nobody any good unless we can break down these barriers, break down these walls between us, and get back to traditional community policing. Now, here in Lynn, and we've been doing it for a number of years anyway, community policing is one of the philosophies I've always engaged and strongly believed in. You can't be an effective police officer in your community unless you have good community relations and with all the groups. So we've had those, but we really have gone to the last couple of years to strengthen them. After Ferguson, I reached out to an individual here in Lynn affiliated with the NAACP. We had some good conversations. Those conversations actually resulted in a meeting down at one of the Bethlehem Pentecostal Church on Light Street early last fall. Church was packed, 150, 200 people, mostly of color. I came in with a few police officers. you know, when the meeting started, honestly, it was a little tense. They're looking at us, we're looking at them. It wasn't like we're here to break bread and have a nice time together. But we talked, we had dialogue. One of the things that I thought was very successful was I got up to the podium and I explained our use of force policy. And if I could give you a quick example for
sure,
a minute.
Sure, absolutely.
If you remember, I think it was about a year and a half ago, and you go down to Charleston, South Carolina, there was an incident where it was a white police officer. I think he was probably in his late 20s, 4 years out of the United States Coast Guard, so he was a veteran. Great shape. He pulls over a 53-year-old black gentleman for a taillight violation, broken taillight. It's all on video. If you don't remember it, go on Facebook. I'm sorry, go on the Google it and you'll find it. During the stop, the 53-year-old gentleman started running, and the officer took his weapon out and shot him and killed him. As a cop, in my wildest imagination, I cannot justify what he did to make it right. It was wrong. First of all, the guy's 53 years old. He was a little overweight. The cop is in ultra-trim shape. If he ran 100 yards, he would have tackled the guy, and we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But he didn't. But I was having the same conversation with a woman a few weeks ago over in Salem, and I was explaining it. A black woman. And she said to me, yeah, why didn't he shoot him in the knee? Why didn't he shoot him in the leg? And I looked at her, I'm going, we can't. That's illegal. And she was surprised. As much as I was surprised that she thought we could do that, she was surprised that, you know, we couldn't do that. So going back to the meeting at the church, when I explained the use of force policy, and it's very in-depth, but we have to go up what we call a force continuum. So you start with, obviously, verbal skills, and you talk your way out of situations or to de-escalate situations. And then, depending on what's happening, you go up using the we call them tools that are on our duty belts, whether it's pepper spray or a baton. God forbid you get to the firearm. But there's certain levels and the strict policies when you can use these types of weapons. So it's not like I can, as I said in that case, I can pull my gun out for somebody with a taillight. That's just crazy. So once we started to explain that to the members of the community, we had some good dialogue, started to break those walls down. Following that, we had two or three other meetings with ECHO, which is the Essex County Community Organization, a group of faith-based churches throughout Essex County. Most of them are down here in the southern part of the county. And those culminated in a recent training we had in our police station back in July, where we had about 30 of the command staff in the Lynn Police Department and about another 50, 55 members of the general public come in. ECHO was kind enough to bring in a professor from Seton Hall University who's an expert in race relations and civil rights protections. And we had a two-hour training, and it was excellent. It was for everybody, not just for the cops, not just for the community. It was everybody, because everybody has preconceived biases and prejudices. They don't want to admit them. They may not even know they have them, but we all have them. I joke when I go out and do community policing. I go out and do public speaking. I'll stand in a room. I'll say, okay, everybody that's prejudiced, raise your hand. And most people will not. I raise my hand right up high, and they're looking like, oh, my God, there's a cop who's admitting he's prejudiced. I am prejudiced. I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. I don't like the New York Yankees. So, and everybody laughs. They get the point. It doesn't have to be a race issue. But you have to know when your prejudices are there. You have to identify them. You have to deal with them. So post-Ferguson-era policing, that's what police departments need to do. Outreach to the community, engage them in conversation. Let's find out. Let's meet each other as individuals, not just as the badge and the gun and the citizen over here. We just need to work together.
You know, the communication is huge. I could go a couple of different ways on this, but let me just jump back. You know, I've worked with police a number of times over my years in education. And, you know, the interpersonal skills that a police officer has are not highlighted as much, as you noted, as much as they should be with the public. In other words, just like all of us have different levels of interpersonal skills and de-escalation skills and so on, but that's so important for police officers. And it speaks to me of all the things, all the issues that they've prevented, you know, and they don't get credit for that. That's not part of the data of the incidents they've prevented.
Right. One of the keys, and I'm a big proponent of this, is training. You know, and I say it all the time, training, training, training. Those are the three main buzzwords of what police officers need to be doing on a daily basis. By law, we have to go into the classroom 40 hours per year for annual in-service training. And that's firearms, that's CPR, that's legal updates, and then dealing with other, you know, issues of the day. But we try to do here in Lynn, we try to do training almost on a daily basis. We call it roll call training. So it might be just a 2 or 3 minute video or a 2 or 3 minute, you know, handout on a new procedure to do something like that. But the more training we can give the officers, the better understanding they have of the issues. It could be mental illness, you know, dealing with folks with mental illness in our community. It could be dealing with folks who are autistic, kids who are autistic, and how to approach them so they don't get nervous and start to flee. It could be somebody that dealing with the elderly, you know, with dementia patients like that. You know, policing isn't just, you know, traditional law and order. We're social service providers now. Don't forget, we're the agency people call when they don't know who else to call. Yeah. So they call us. We get calls for all kinds of things. So we have to be generalists in all kinds of issues. So if we know what we're doing and the officers have the proper training, hopefully they can be able to help these situations. So number one, no one gets hurt. Number two, no one's going to jail that shouldn't be going to jail. And number three, we get we resolve the problem. We get the folks into wherever they're a dementia patient, we get them home and to be safe and sound with their loved ones. If it's somebody that's lost, we get them on their way. If it's somebody that's homeless, we get them into a shelter, something like that. We just need to have the skills and the ability to do that.
And when you think about it, too, the police, no one knows a community better than the police officers, probably. You know, I mean, who could know that better than the police officers?
Well, that's so true. And it's kind of nice because over the years, Lynn had a residency requirement. And I'll be honest with you, I have mixed feelings about whether police officers should live in the same community that they were, because sometimes it can get awkward.
Yeah.
But hiring purposes, we do hire, they call it residence preference. We're a civil service department. So when you hire your officers from the community, they know the community. And this is what actually got brought up in that ECHO training that we had. So a lot of our officers, we have a diverse group of officers. We have officers of color. But, you know, we all, for the most part, all were born and brought up in Lynn. You know, we came up through, we went to the Lynn schools, we played sports together, we, you know, hung around together, even with the folks that we police today. So it's kind of like your home team. You know everybody. So that's huge. And then you know your community. And each community is different. So if you you take a Lynn police officer and he goes out and patrols Worcester, he's not going to know who's who and what's what. You have to know the home field. You have home field advantage. It really helps out.
Yeah, gotcha. Let's talk about some of the programs that you're working with here or started or continued here with the Lynn Police Department. The behavioral health unit. Tell us about that.
Well, the behavioral health unit is something, I'll be honest with you, I'm very proud of. Everybody's aware of the opiate epidemic that's, you know, the country's facing. It's really, you know, I know the Northeast is really in the midst of this. It's killing people. It's killing people all across the spectrums, rich, poor, people of color, homeless people, people living in mansions in the affluent communities. It's everywhere. It's if we don't get control of it, we're going to be in trouble. So what we did 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to be able to submit a grant application to then Attorney General Martha Coakley. We received $250,000, and we hired two civilian clinicians and one civilian caseworker who are specialists in substance abuse and mental illness. Each of them worked 40 hours a week with us. We gave them office space inside the police station, right by the back door where the patrol officers come and go. They do ride-alongs, and their goal is to help us fight not only the overdose and the opiate epidemic but and the mental illness, but just anything that concerns behavioral health in Lynn. So, excuse me, for example, every overdose we have, somebody from the BHU, police love acronyms, so let's call them BHU. BHU will make a phone call the next day on every single overdose. The goal of to get the person into treatment. If we can get them, guide them into treatment, they have what we call a virtual toolbox, so they have all kinds of resources where they can connect with healthcare agencies or treatment agencies, other social service groups who can. So if we take somebody who's overdosed, we can send them in the right direction. If families of individuals that have substance abuse and mental illness don't know what to do, they can call the behavioral health unit. They'll help them, you know, steer them in the right direction, give them some advice and some guidance. Once every 2 weeks, the behavioral health unit hosts meetings inside the police station at the community room so families can come together and talk about these issues. Because, you know, we can't put this, like, I'm an Irish Catholic. The old Irish Catholics kept all their problems in the closet. Nobody wanted to talk about any issues or you know, Uncle Charlie, who might have been an alcoholic. It was just, God forbid, you'd be in church for 6 years in penance. Today, we got to put it on the table, and we are. So that's why this behavioral health unit is so good. But I got to point out one thing which scares the daylights out of me. Crime is down. Crime's down in the area. Crime has been down in Lynn 10% over the last 5 years. There's more addicts on the street. There's more overdoses than we've ever seen. Traditionally, when you look at it from a police perspective, the more addicts you have on the street, the more overdoses, they have to pay for their drugs. And most of these folks would be committing crime, house breaks, store robberies, pocketbook thefts. But if crime's down and we have more addicts on the street, it doesn't make sense. There's something wrong here. So a few months ago, I had that question. I brought these individuals from the BHU into my office, and I posed that question to them. And I was a bit shocked at the answer, but one of the gentlemen that works here, Tito Rodriguez, he's been in that business for 40 years. He says, "Chief, when I make those phone calls following up the overdose of the next day, I'm frequently getting, 'Listen, I can't talk to you right now. I'm at work.'" And just think about that for a second. That scares the daylights out of me. That means there's a lot of people gainfully employed in society today that have an opiate addiction. They could be cops. They could be lawyers. They could be media people. They could be managing your 401k at Fidelity or, you know, J.P. Morgan, wherever you have your investments, but they're working. And that just, like I said, scares the daylights out of me. And those folks, as well as any folks, any individual has an addiction, we need to help them. We need to find a way to get them back to be productive members of society and kick that habit.
Wow. That's an amazing statistic and story, to be quite honest with you. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to just jump to a couple of other areas. The teen drop-in center at Lynn Tech. Tell me about that one, because I understand that one's been very successful.
Yeah, that was another one of my little pet projects I really strongly believe in. We started it several years ago, again, through grants. We got Senator Charles E. Shannon grant through the Massachusetts Executive Office of Public Safety. It was part of outreach efforts started probably 6-7 years ago to try to combat the gang problem. Back in around 2010, Lynn had a lot of gang activity. We have since really knocked it down substantially. But one of the things we wanted to do was provide a safe haven for kids to come and hang out and have activities. So what we did was we created the Lynn Teen Drop-In Center in cooperation with Lynn Parks and Recreation. Lisa Nerick, a lot of folks will know her from Lynn. She helps us run it. It's at Lynn Tech on one weekend night, either Friday or Saturday. It alternates during basketball season, so we have the facility. But it's from 6:30 to 9:30. Kids can come through. We advertise as a safe haven. And you know, we have uniformed police officers present. We also have plainclothes police officers present. We encourage our officers to get out with shorts and a T-shirt. It's the field house, Lynn Tech Field House. You can play basketball. You can play wiffle ball. You can pick up a quick game of whatever. We encourage the officers to go out and play hoop with the kids. Yeah. It accomplishes a number of things. It gives the kids a safe place to go. They can have activities. It builds the bond between police officers and the kids, so they look at the cops as human beings, not, like I said before, the badge and the gun and the bad guys. And we actually have had rival gang members playing basketball together, so it's helped reduce crime. One of the things we do on every weekend night we have it, we feed them. And we get some donations from some of the local restaurants, but it might be pizza, pizza and a soda or something like that. So we try to feed the kids, and the old adage, feed them, they will come. It helps. But especially in the wintertime. Summertime, it's a little slow. We do run it in the summer. Right now it's on the way. But in the wintertime when it's cold, the kids have no place to go. We don't want them hanging on the street corner. Yeah. So we give it to them. We can have 200 or 300 kids in the field house on a Friday night, and it's great because it's safe. They're having fun. Their activities. And they'll do arts and crafts nights, for folks that might want to do that. If the girls are there and they want to do hairdressing, they'll bring some of the local hair salons in to do hair braiding and stuff like that. So we try to make it a variety of activities so we can attract more people in there. But it's been great.
You know, I hear stories, too, of years gone by where, and probably even before, I'm no kid either, but even before my time, where those kinds of things happened naturally or, happened as well back in society, and they were great for communities, big events where young people gathered.
Yeah, it was. It's funny, when I was a kid, of course, my father was a police officer in Lynn, and I'm third generation. His uncle was a cop. But I remember the old police athletic league. That was something I remember they did variety of shows in City Hall, so they'd get people in there with some skills. And again, I'm an Irish Catholic. I didn't ever had any singing skills or dancing skills. So I was not one of those in the variety show type. But but they would do athletic events. Same thing, just getting kids there. But again, it's good because when we do community police community meetings, it's even when we were kids, Bill. It's like you'd say, "I got nothing to do. I got nothing to do. I'm gonna hang on the street corner." And when they hang on the street corner, they tend to get a little rambunctious once in a while, and then something happens or whatever, and then there's problems. Yeah. Give the kids some direction. Give them some place safe to go, and you'll reap the positives from it eventually.
I want to ask you one more program that you have here. That's the Criminal Justice Mental Health Working Group. Tell me more about that one, because, again, you touched on it earlier, but mental health seems to be it's got to be so many of, the people that you're dealing with might be dealing with those issues.
That's so true. And this is in any community, I got to tell you, any community across the Commonwealth. a lot of folks will tell you it goes back to years and years ago. They closed Danvers State Hospital. They closed a lot of the state facilities, the institutions where they house these people, and probably for good cause. I was a kid back then, but I remember some of the stories. But there's a lot of folks out there. And I'm a parent. I've got two boys at home. They're adults now. But there's a lot of kids today who are on medications for whatever reason. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to say yay and nay whether it's done, but they're used to taking medications. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But there's a lot of folks out in the community now with mental illness. And sometimes they get in trouble. You know, sometimes they scare other people, so it keeps businesses. It affects businesses. It affects people just coming out and walking around the community. So, and those are the folks from a police perspective. We really don't want to arrest because again, as I said a few minutes ago, people call us. They don't know what else to do when they're frustrated. So we got somebody with mental illness who might be acting up, say, in the middle of Lynn Common, and is their disorderly conduct technically. Are they really disorderly by intent? No. By mental illness, yes. So we formed this mental health working group several years ago. One of our deputy chiefs, Lenny Desmaris, actually sits in the meeting as my representative. But we bring together the partners. There's folks from Bridgewell, Project Copia. There's folks from Elliott Community Services who has the state contract for this. We have both folks from Partners, Union Hospital, Lynn Community Health, a lot of the other partners, because we're all dealing with the same clients. So we've got partnerships involved with us now. So if, let's say, Kevin Coppinger is down in Central Square and Officer Smith runs into him and knows Kevin's off his medications today, we can now pick up the phone and call his or her, or Kevin's, healthcare worker, and say, hey, we got Kevin down here. What can we do? And if we have to issue, a civil commitment paper through the court, we will. Or if we can just get Kevin to voluntarily go over and see, his casework, his clinician, we do it. So it's just another piece of the puzzle to make public safety better by bringing in not just law enforcement, bringing in the folks who are actually experts in this field, because we're generalists, as I said, and the experts who are trained, let them take care of the serious issues.
As you talk about these issues, and if people are listening to them, I think people are astounded, to be honest with you, with the scope and breadth of what policing involves right now, and this kind of that this already exists right now in the city of Lynn. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate. I've been born and brought up in Lynn, lived here all my life. Everybody knows the Lynn City of Sin jingle, the whole bit. Lynn's has had a bad reputation for years, and people look at us kind of funny, and we're always battling that back and forth. But, Lynn has come a long way. But we've come a long way because we have programs. A lot of good folks come here, and there's a variety of issues here. It is, for me as a police chief, it is a challenging job because there's a lot of stuff that we need to accomplish. But as I said before, policing has evolved into a much wider scale of duties that we are responsible for. So we're trying to do all these issues here. But there's a lot of these issues here, and it's funny. I'll just give another little quick story if I could, and let's go back to some of the drug problems here. Lynn has a curfew, like between 12:30 a.m. and 6 a.m. that you're under 18, you can't be out and about, unless you're with a parent. There's a few exceptions. Now, we're not allowed to arrest you, but we are allowed to bring you back to the police station and bring you home. And when this first went into effect, we don't use this a lot, but every once in a while you'll see some young kids come in here looking to buy drugs at 3 a.m. Our police officers, this is where we go back to what you just said about knowing your community. Let's just say, I don't want to pick on any particular town because they might get mad at me. Let's just say, Main Street, USA, 20 miles up the coast, in an affluent town, there's two kids here in Lynn trying to buy marijuana at 3 a.m. And we'll pull up to them and say, I'm here to see my friend Mary. Well, there's no Mary. We get to the bottom of it. We bring them to the police station under the curfew. What I love about this story is I got this from one of our lieutenants who called this house. So what we do in those situations, we'll call the house and say, listen, you have to come down to Lynn Police Station to pick up your daughter. And one particular father got the phone call at 3 a.m. He goes, not my daughter. Wouldn't be my daughter. She would never be in Lynn. God knows. She would never go there. We're like, well, sir, we have your daughter here. She's in the other room. We have her ID. She gave me a phone number. No, it cannot be my daughter. So finally the lieutenant says, could you do me a favor, sir? Could you just walk down the hall, see if, Mary, whatever her name was, is tucked in bed? And if she is, I apologize. If she isn't, you got to come down here. And about a minute later, you hear the father come back. And he goes, well, what's your address? I'm awful sorry. I'll be right there. So it's one of those things, everybody has got to watch their kids. And if you watch their kids, you got to, I'm rambling here a little bit. We have other programs. We call it Be a Parent, Not a Pal. We do this at prom season. So parents have to watch their kids. They got to keep them under control. They got to know where they are. Because if they're not, they're going to be susceptible to making bad decisions, especially during the teenage years. And that's something else we've learned through policing over the years. So it's a community effort for public safety, and that's one of the things that we keep pushing and pushing and pushing here.
We're talking with Kevin Coppinger, police chief, City of Lynn. Kevin is running for Essex County Sheriff. The election is in November, the primary in September, coming right up. So, Kevin, tell us why you're running for sheriff and, you know, what it is that you would bring to the sheriff's office and out over in Middleton.
Well, I've been a police officer for 33 years. I've seen a lot. I've learned a lot. I know this is on radio, but I've earned these gray hairs that are on the top of my head and a few of them that have fallen out. You know, we talked about a lot of the programs we have in Lynn. We talked about a lot of the issues that society faces today. One of the things that's missing to me is you know, when we work with the sheriff's office, policing has evolved into the 21st century. We're doing a lot of stuff that we've just discussed over the last several minutes. The sheriff's office does a lot of good things, but I think they can do more. They're almost like an underutilized asset out there. Now, the average stay for an inmate at the Essex County Sheriff's Essex County Jail in Middleton is about 9 months. That's a small window. But if you have an individual that's in custody, if we can start them on some programs to address whatever their issues are. So upon intake, they need to do a good triage, just like when you go to the emergency room. They want to find out what the issue is. Find out what it is, get them into a program, so hopefully we can give these folks a chance to come back to the community as productive members of society. Once they get out of jail after that 9 months, they're coming back to our cities and towns. Last thing we want them to do is commit crime again. 47% of the inmates that come out of the Essex County Jail repeat crime, and they're back in Middleton, you know, soon enough. That's almost half of who comes out. We have to do a better job. What I want to see done is when they leave the jail, we hook them up with some of these programs in the individual communities. So if, particularly if aftercare, so if they have a program in the jail or if they have an addiction problem, they start treatment up there. So they come back to the communities, they have aftercare, so it follows in. We've got another program that wasn't on that sheet, but it's called ROCA. We partnered up with them just in January through another grant I was able to get. And ROCA is actually focuses on the 18 to 24-year-old males, and they take them out. Once they come out of jail, they get into their program, they'll give them some job training skills to actually get them a job. But they'll give them a job, they'll take the Lynn individuals and give them a job in Chelsea. Chelsea individuals might come back to Lynn, but the purpose here is you take the Lynn kids out of their environment, away from their drug dealers, their old gangbangers, put them over in Chelsea, give them a chance, and ROCA will make sure that they show up to work every day. So I see the jail as something we can help really take to the next step to help public safety throughout the county. We've had successes in Lynn. I want to bring those successes countywide. I have four particular things that I want to do in this campaign. One, I want to further professionalize the staff of the Essex County Sheriff's Department. They have some great employees up there. You heard me talk about training. Training has to be increased. Train them. Make sure their certifications are current, give them the proper tools and resources that they need. That will enhance officer safety as well as inmate safety. You know, it's a tough job to work in the jail. We want to make sure they can have everything they need to do it right. And good training builds good confidence, and then you have those verbal skills we talked about, trying to de-escalate any problems. Number two, we talked about the opiate epidemic a little bit here. They do have programs up there. I want to expand and improve the current programs there. There's a lot to be done there. And I think that's a huge issue because of the extent of the opiate. Number three is the aftercare program and the reentry programs. We have to be stronger there. We just can't let the jail just let the individuals go back into our community without some kind of guidance and direction. We need to work together with all our local partners to make that stronger. And fourth, and this is one of the things I feel very strongly about, is I want to take the politics out of the Essex County Sheriff's Department. Back in March when I announced my candidacy, I said I would not take any political donations from any member of the Lynn Police Department because I supervise them. I just don't think it's right. Nor would I take any money from any member of the Essex County Sheriff's Department. It breeds a bad stigma about the agency when that happens. Because any promotions, any assignments, any transfers should be done based on merit and qualifications, not on the amount of political money, not on the amount of a political donation that you gave to a particular candidate. It has to be clean, and that's where you'll professionalize that agency and make it even better. If you're up for promotion and the guy that's running for the same job as you gave that candidate $1,000 and he gets a job and you don't, even if he's more qualified, it's going to be demoralizing to you, and that's going to just kind of, you know, bring things down to a level. One of the things I do have with the Sheriff's Department, with the Sheriff's campaign, is I have the endorsements of former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis, former District Attorney Kevin Burke, and the endorsements of 45 current or retired police chiefs here in Essex County. We all work the same problems as I talked about what's in our communities. We work together. They all believe in that I would be a good sheriff, that I have the skills and the abilities to bring that sheriff's office up to the next level, raise the bar, do a better job for the benefit of our citizens. There's a lot of people in the jail that probably shouldn't be there. We talked about opiate epidemic. We talked about mental illness. Those folks, we need to kind of filter them out on a one-on-one basis and see if there's a better venue for their care. Again, health care, mental illness, if that's what the issue is, they need to be in those venues where those experts are. Don't get me wrong, I'm not soft on crime. If somebody's dealing drugs, somebody's breaking into those houses, stealing those little old ladies' pocketbooks, they need to go to jail. They need to go behind bars, and they need to do their time, whatever the courts decide. So it's kind of a catch-22. There's a multifaceted approach to the jail, but I just think the jail policing has come so far in the last several years. I think the jail needs to catch up with us, become an active partner, come to the table. You talked about the mental health working group. They should be at that working group. They should be doing stuff in our communities more active than they are today.
Right. Last question, kind of an open-ended question. Certainly add anything you'd like to about the race for sheriff. But I'm thinking, has there been a particular story, or as you've been out and around Essex County, any particular event or story that kind of, you know, has been kind of memorable for you as you got to travel different areas of Essex County?
Well, I got to tell you, I already gave you the story, which when we're speaking of that black woman about the shooting in the Charleston, South Carolina. That was at the Black Picnic over in Salem Willows, and she floored me with that. And it really wasn't a campaign thing; it was more of a chief thing. But she floored me with that because that just opened my eyes as to what the perception is from the black community with policing now post Ferguson. I got to say this, though, 34 cities and towns in Essex County. I've been in every single one of them. They're all different. I'm having a great time meeting people. It's wonderful. I get great reception when I introduce myself. A lot of people know there's a chief of police running. Number one, there's a lot of candidates in the race. If people haven't following it, there's a lot of candidates in the race. There's signs everywhere. A lot of people don't know who's who. When I do, you know, I'll go out there and shake in the hands and introduce them myself. When people find out I'm the chief of police, they think it's great. I get a great reception. I get good questions. They say, oh, you're the guy for the job. The problem with this election going to be, if it's Thursday, September 8th, it's going to be a very, very low-key election. There's a couple of other small state representative races throughout the county here or there, but it's not a national election. Everybody's focusing on the Democrat-Republican presidential race coming up in November. No, nobody's thinking about Thursday, September 8th. Thursday. We usually vote on Tuesday. Thursday, September 8th. It's going to be very, very low-key. We got to get the vote out. We got to ask people to take the time to go out and vote. And of course, if they do, I hope they would consider my candidacy, Kevin Kloppinger. I think I would be a great sheriff. I've got a great career in Lynn here. I think I'll let my resume speak for itself. I have vision for the sheriff's office. I think it's, like I said before, it's an asset that we can bring to a new level and get more bang for the buck out there. One thing I will say, the next sheriff has to have a variety of skills that I think I am the only one. You have to have somebody with good administrative skills. I run a 200-man police department here. I oversee a $20 million budget. I always spend my budget within budget. I know how to spend taxpayers' money efficiently and effectively and give you more bang for the buck. I can prove results. I have the law enforcement experience that we've talked about here in our conversation, and I also have the community engagement, which is so key today to public safety. No agency, local, state, or federal, can do this game by themselves, play this game by themselves. You have to have partners across the spectrum, inside or outside of law enforcement.
Kevin, I got to follow up. Seeing Thursday, September 8th, I actually did not realize that the primary was on Thursday, September 8th. That just strikes me. I mean, that's the Thursday after Labor Day. We don't vote on Thursdays. Have there ever been an election where we voted on a Thursday? I don't know that. I mean, I've been watching nationally. There have been primaries this summer in some states, but they're on Tuesdays. You know, and sometimes people vote on Saturdays. I get that piece, but here we've never voted on a Thursday.
In fact, I've asked the question why. You know, and they wouldn't do it the Tuesday after Labor Day because it's too busy. Schools are reopening. People, summer's winding down. It's just okay. That's a no-brainer. It's too busy. Somebody said, and I never actually went and checked this, but someone said the Jewish holidays fall in the next week, which can you know, move the schedule around. I know the Secretary of State's office said that there has to be a certain number of dates between the November 8th final and the primary here, so they have to find a date to do it, and that's how they backed into Thursday, September 8th. People are not going to be thinking about voting. like I said, it's very, very minimal. So we got to push out the vote, push out the vote, push out the vote. And regardless of who they're going to vote for, they just need to vote. That's obviously the Democratic way.
No, exactly. No, that must be the reason, obviously. All right, Kevin, great talking with you. Great meeting you, and best of luck.
Thank you, Bill, very much. It was a pleasure.
Kevin Coppinger, Police Chief, City of Lynn. I'm Bill Newell. This is MSONewsSports.com.